Hello, and welcome to another episode of For the Love of Sports. My name is Michael Raziel. This is the show where we get to talk about sports, we get to talk about business, and we get to talk about everything in between. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, you know exactly what to do. Five-star review on Spotify, like and subscribe on YouTube, say something really nice about me in the reviews, and a five-star for me and my guy, Aswan Cruikshank. He's a four-time author, Move Swiftly podcast host, former Stony Brook University football player, and the one and only Move Swiftly speaker. Aswan, how you doing today, man?
Doing fantastic, Michael. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. I love hearing when someone's fantastic because I don't have to do anything to make your day good, man. You're already here and we got it. So let me go.
We're alive, brother. We're alive. Every day above ground is a good day.
Couldn't agree more. Aswan, I'm very excited to get to talk to you about Move Swiftly, what you're doing, the content creation. You wrote four books. I wrote one. Not a big deal, but four, definitely a bigger number than one. So we'll get into all that stuff. The podcast. If you're on a podcast, you have a podcast, you didn't talk about your podcast, have you really ever podcasted before? Exactly. So we'll get to that as well. But the first question, Aswan, I have for everybody on the For the Love of Sports podcast is, why do you love sports so much?
Well, you said the name, Aswan Cruikshank. You know, outside of sports, I was the definition of a social misfit. All right. It was rough. It was rough being in that classroom. It was rough having to listen to teachers go through the attendance and try to pronounce my name, butcher my name, say, is it ass? Is it this? Is it two asses? And with football, I found football and none of that mattered. All that mattered was who's willing to put in the work, who's willing to commit, and who can really build as a team. And it's something I fell in love with because of the fact that all of us were misfits. You know, when you really dedicate yourself to the game, Mike, you know all of us are misfits, whether you're 6'9 and 330 pounds or you're just, you know, fast like a cheetah, all of us are different, and it's where I found my acceptance. So that's how I fell in love with it.
Yeah, right. You just become a number, whether that's good or bad, right? You know, it can be taken as a bad thing. It also can be taken as a good thing, right? It doesn't matter what your name are, who you are, where you came from. It's 31. Who's 31? How did he do that? Let's get him to do it again, right? It's like that exact.
Yeah, the cutthroat in it. And I've heard Ray Lewis say this. I grew up in Maryland, guys, so I'm a diehard Ray Lewis fan. But I've heard him say this throughout his 17-year career. Numbers do not lie. Men lie, women lie, but the numbers ain't going to lie. And that's what's beautiful about the game.
I love it. I'm a big football guy. Hoping for the best with you and your Ravens there. Let's not get too into it. I don't think I want to do that to you right now, but very excited again.
The thing is, I grew up a Redskins fan. Here's the power of sports, and I hope I don't get too sidetracked, but I grew up a diehard Redskins fan, but I had more Ray Lewis stuff, more Ray Lewis paraphernalia. Okay. So that's an early gem for you guys in terms of, because we're actually recording this on a day where I think Lamar Jackson requested a trade, and understand the importance of the player. You're not getting another Ray Lewis. There's very few people who can stay that loyal. So
it's times have changed. Yes. I guess we could say that, especially in football. Used to be in basketball, it was nice and easy to just kind of say, I want to go here, give me that, you know, do that kind of thing. Football is starting to get there, but I'm player empowerment. I'm all for it. You played the game a little longer than I have, of course. Right. So I'll lean on you for a lot of that stuff. But definitely, I'm excited to talk to you specifically about your career, what you've done. You played football, Stony Brook University. Taj, we just had him on the show before. Maybe you guys overlapped. I'm not going to lie. I didn't see the exact dates when each of you were there. But I think it's a really cool opportunity, again, to find someone, former athlete, who's now doing something, who is an entrepreneur, as I said, that is doing a lot of different things in the space, which I'm excited about. So the first thing I do want to get into is mental and physical training. So I saw that you were a fitness trainer. You worked at LA Fitness. Like, you've worked in many different places, Orange Theory, if I'm not mistaken. So you've worked in a lot of places that had a lot of physical, right? I got my Peloton right behind me. I try and use it every day. It's really good for you. Like, where does the physical and the mental training, I guess, where does that come into your life, and where did you start to really take both of those seriously?
I started taking those seriously really, really early. So my mother would, and I put this in my book, my second book, Make Your Move. My mother would wake me up about 5 a.m. every, like, morning after morning and tell me to go for a run. Like, she'd take me on runs with her. And the part about football is great, but the part about football is what we're missing is a lot of the conditioning aspects of it. You know, a lot of the players and a lot of the coaches, they use running for punishment. So when I was done playing, I wanted to get back into doing I want to get back into that feeling of competing. I want to get back in the feeling fit. You know, one of the knocks on me as a player was I was too small. So by the time I got to Stony Brook, you know, I had coaches telling me to put on weight, eat more, you know, doing things that were not conducive to my health, not helping my cholesterol levels, not doing the things that I know I'm going to need to be actual healthy human. They're telling me to fatten up just to potentially start. And that was the wrong advice. So once I was done with Stony Brook, I got on my shit, so to speak, in terms of making sure I'm running every morning, making sure I'm starting. I used to jokingly always say, I want to start looking like a DB. You know, I played linebacker. I actually wanted to start looking like Taj, where I'm starting to get lean and things like that. So what I did after, as far as the physical training, what I did after I was done playing is I really got into running. I still run every single morning at the moment. I'm training to run for a marathon. And I got really into the actual general fitness. And because of the entrepreneurial mindset I have, I said, you know, if I'm going to be in fitness, why not just work in fitness too? Because I worked at a gym before I got to Stony Brook. So to go back in the story a little bit, I didn't start off at Stony Brook, Mike. After high school, I went to a Division II school named Carson Newman College, and I tore my ACL. So I tore my ACL, and I took my sophomore year off, and I worked at a gym. So I was around other personal trainers that had were done their playing career, and they were trying to, you know, make a living as a personal trainer. So I saw that before I got to Stony Brook, and I saw that there were bigger things in life than football. So when it comes to answer your question in terms of where the physical and the mental meets, it's all about, as much as I love football, it doesn't own me. You know what I'm saying? As much as I love football and I love the game, I love what it teaches, I was never that great of a player to where the coaches had so much control of me where I couldn't think for myself. So those years and those times spent with my mother running and being in the gym and working on my general fitness, I was able to kind of merge those two mindsets.
And that's pretty difficult for a 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old, right, through college as well. Yeah. You know, you've been in the sport for so long. It is a very much a drill sergeant. Hey, you do this, you know, you are a piece to this puzzle. you are a pawn or whomever you want to be in this chess game, right? Like, it's about the greater team. What was it about your upbringing that allowed you to say, you know, no, I guess, for lack of a better term? And how do you think that served you in the game, but also outside of the game as well?
So my father has run his own business since I was 13 years old. He's been his own boss, all right? And I tell people all the time, I've won the coaching lottery. I played for some of the most legendary football coaches you can possibly imagine. Now I wouldn't even start talking about my youth football playing career, but I'm talking about high school and the two college programs I played for. High school was a guy named Bob Malloy, who retired with the most wins in high school of any high school football coach in Maryland. That's over 400. Right after, like I mentioned, was Coach Sparks at Carson Newman College. He retired. The late Coach Sparks retired there. My linebackers coach was a guy named Carl Torbush, who was the head coach at UNC. So I'm talking about the head coach at UNC is now my position coach at a Division II school. And then I went to Stony Brook, where Coach Priori is the same guy. So I saw these great examples of coaches, but then I had my father's balance to where he ran his own business. So I was able to compare and contrast. I tell people that all the time. Is he ran his own business. These coaches worked for a company, but they ran it like it was their own business. And that's where the mental work, where I was able to mold all of those mindsets into one.
I love that, dude. That is awesome. Yeah, yeah. Just standing on the shoulders of giants, right? Finding a lot of smart people. Not everything they say is going to resonate 100% with you.
Absolutely not.
Someone's going to say almost the exact same thing with a couple different words, and that's going to be the one that hits home, right? So it's finding all these really smart people, surrounding yourself with them, your teammates, your cheerleaders, whomever, and really just being able to get, you know, as much information as you can, not out of them, but from them, to be utilized through you, which I think is awesome, and it's a great way of doing it. Again, at a very young age, figuring that out. Took me till 25, 26, 27 to really figure that out and then utilize it. You know, here I am at 31, feel very grateful for that time, but it seems like you did that a much, much earlier in your life. And I think I also want to go back to the piece again, just bringing it back up. Like, your mom would wake you up at 5 o'clock every single day to go for a run. Like, that is obviously physical. That's easy. I don't care how long it was, mile, 2 miles, 10 miles. The fact that it was 5 o'clock every day, man, like, that is just brutal. That is the definition of mental discipline, right? That is mental toughness. That is making yourself stronger, understanding that you are going to do something like that, whether you like it or not, right? It's so easy to say no to running at 5 o'clock in the morning. I would say 99% of people say no to running at 5 o'clock in the morning, right? But it's the fact that you were able to get up and do that. Did you have appreciation for that in the moment, or was that something that you kind of just lamented and now that you can look back on and say, damn, like, I'm very grateful for every single one of those?
No, hell no, not in the moment. So I honestly used to get out of it. I used to like try to get out of it. Oh, I got practice today, mom. I ain't doing it during the season. Wasn't happening. There was actually a one time in which me and her got into it because my dad, there was a track team that I joined and we were going to be practicing in the afternoon, and it was going to replace the workouts with me and her. So that was a fight all the time. It was a fight all the time. But I'll never forget, there was one time early on towards the end of the workout, and I don't know if you work out now, but when you are done and you see that sun rising, I'll never forget her telling me one time, you see, the hardest part is waking up, son. The hardest part is waking up. The hardest part is waking up. You're going to be so happy that you woke up this early and actually got this done. And that piece has kind of stuck with me, because now, I mean, look, if I don't get my run in the morning, I'm one grumpy son of a bitch. Like, I won't function without that workout I have in the morning. And I rest on what she told me in terms of the hardest part is waking up. It really is not as bad as everyone makes it seem.
It really is. And all you have to do is really put your feet on the floor, right? You got carpets in your bedroom, that's one thing, but I got hardwoods in mine. Once you put your feet on the floor, it's cold floor. It wakes you right up. It's really not that bad. Get up, slam a glass of water, you're ready for the day. It's not nearly as bad. I say this, of course, when I wake up at 6:45 in the morning, so, you know, right, a little different. But I like to think that I get up. My favorite part of the day, 9 times out of 10, is that morning, right? I have a bunch of things. I try and check as many boxes as I can before 9 o'clock in the morning, because then I know 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm already finished with half the things that I wanted to do today. Well, the rest of the world is just kind of rubbing their eyes and logging on. And whether, you know, I don't like to compare myself against others, but it's nice feeling knowing, like, all right, I'm already kicking ass today. How much more ass can I kick? Because now I have an entire work day, and then all the time that I have afterwards to do whatever is necessary. So I always kind of like that little mental game I play with myself as well.
It's just like in business. It's called leveraging. You know, you have a product, and very hard to come up with a brand new product. Like, it's very hard to come up with something that someone hasn't already thought of. The winners figured out a way to leverage what they have and just keep leveraging and leveraging. And that's what waking up early in the morning really does for you. It leverages kind of the opportunities that you have.
How many people do you try to teach that to, that eventually when they do it, they say thank you afterwards?
I don't broach it. So here's what I've learned. I've tried in the past, but if it's not in a person, you just let it go. It has to be in you. It's either you got it or you don't.
I respect that. Yeah, it's difficult, man. There's a lot of things that I try and teach people. They take it. If they don't, unfortunately, you know, we got enough people watching and listening here, and I appreciate every single one of them, and hopefully they can get one thing out of this episode with you, Aswan, and that is my goal with this whole thing. So let's talk a little bit about the entrepreneurial side of it. As you said, your father, if I'm not mistaken, had his own business since you were the age of 13. You kind of saw that the whole time. You saw the dedication through, you know, the running with your mother in the mornings. So you had all these incredible coaches around you where you're able to take some piece of information from each and every single one of them, not only to use in the game of football, but in the game of life, of course, right? So it sounds like entrepreneurship was kind of always down, you know, an alley that you had the opportunity to go down. At what point did you realize that and then finally take the leap of faith and say, I don't really want to work for anyone anymore. Put it all on my shoulders. See what I can do.
It was probably when I got to Stony Brook. It was when I got to Stony Brook, to be honest with you. So I got there and I made Stony Brook like my dream school, because the knock on me in high school again was I was too small to go D1. And when you play for the high school I played for, not going D1, you felt like a failure, at least the way I took it. I was a captain. I started for 2 years. There was no way that I felt like I shouldn't be playing Division I football. So out of high school, like I mentioned, I went D2, and then I tore my ACL, and then I started working at this gym. I didn't realize how valuable that experience was, because these were membership consultants and personal trainers making over six figures selling gym memberships and selling training packages. So I didn't realize and this is South Bethesda, Maryland. Like, this is one of the richest parts of the entire country. I didn't realize the amount of entrepreneurs and the amount of entrepreneurial training I was getting just in that year because I was so fixated on playing football at Stony Brook. When I got to Stony Brook, I felt like I was like drowning because the college atmosphere was like, it's like taking like two hands wrapped around my neck because everything was so programmed. Everything was, okay, do this. If you have a question, go ahead. Like there was zero entrepreneurial energy. So once I finally, you know, once I finally graduated and I decided, look, I can't take it. I can't work this 9-to-5 shit anymore because I was used to, I've seen people make six figures just off their own grind and their own hustle. So right after college, I decided to work for a company named, instead of doing the normal thing and going and coach college and, you know, being a GA and all that stuff, there was an opportunity for me to be a scout for an independent scouting company named National Scouting Report, which was all commission work. So I took it and I worked overnight at this gym, and that's the way I was able to come up and build a lot of the concepts that I've built now. Is I was going out actively looking for players. I tried this. I signed up three players. It was a company that worked with all sports, but of course football was the main three people that I signed up. But I would go out and recruit field hockey, you know, girls lacrosse and all that kind of stuff, even golf at one point. And what happened was I was working overnight in the gym just to have a check every 2 weeks, and that's where I started to see the connection. I'm like, you know, it was be a whole lot easier if I could build my own gym where these athletes could just come and we can recruit them. And that's where I came up with gym44.com.
I love it, dude. Well, talk to me a little bit about gym44.com. That wasn't even in my notes.
Yeah, gym44.com was the first company I started. And all it is a coach can just log in the same way you can log in for a Gmail account or a Facebook account. And all it is posting tryouts, just posting tryouts. A player looks at it. He puts in his information, sport, height, weight, whatever it is. And whoever posted the tryout, you know, they can see it in the search like a Google account. And if the tryout is not available in your area, you can. There's two buttons on each tryout. There's reserve and request. If you can make it, you're going to reserve a spot. If you can't make it, you request a spot. And that dictates the next post. So that's all it is.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's crazy about that is so many people told me that they didn't understand it. So this is when the, and any entrepreneurs listening to me right now, it's called highs and lows for a reason. All right. Highs and absolute lows, because it was that company that made me, you know, lose everything. Like lost my car, repossessed, phone, lost absolutely everything. Because what I tried to do, I was tired of explaining that concept to every coach. And they just didn't want to listen to me. So the cool thing about it, Mike, is I put a spot where advertisers can advertise on the tryout, right? So coaches didn't want to go out of their way, I guess, and go try to sell sponsorship and all that. So I tried to start up my own team. And that's when I fell flat on my face. I mean, lost everything, lost car, phone, and I had to bounce back. The way I bounced back again was by selling gym memberships and going and working at LA Fitness and moving to Florida, which is more of an area that has the athletes and I can appreciate the work I'm doing.
Well, I respect the hell out of that, man. It takes a certain kind of person to believe in something so much that they're willing to essentially lose just about all of it. And it yeah. seems like you were able to do that because you did believe in it. Now I'll either ask this question or kind mm-hmm. of pose. Yeah, maybe I'll pose this question. Was it the advertising piece that put you under? Was there a stream of revenue? Was there something that could have been done about the first piece, the, you know, explaining to coaches and getting that done, rather than trying to go out and create a team around something that really wasn't the initial, like the impetus, the mission of the, you know, that just sounds like you're just trying to sell some digital advertising and shit, and that's the problem. Seems like the idea itself, Gym44, seems like it was actually really smart, and mm-hmm. if you maybe went down that lane a little bit harder, could have been fine.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was 1,000% the advertising piece. Coaches don't want, well, not coaches, people in general hate to be confused.
Hate change. Yeah, that too. Yeah.
All right. So my biggest mistake was, first of all, I was going to charge to post the tryouts, right? So in my mind, I was already cutting advertising deals before any advertising deals got done. So because they were, any coach that was wanting to use it, because they were going to have to go out and get people to pay on their ads, they're like, no, I'm not going to do it. Their sales defense went up. So what I actually changed since the idea, the name of the team was going to be the Ocean City Sharks. So what I changed since then is that it's free to post. post. Like, you don't, if you don't want to go out and add, then fine, just post them for free and it's completely fine. And I'm going to be the bridge between the business advertisers and the coaches. So I'll be the go-between, as opposed to me trying to get all these coaches to use it and then say, oh, by the way, you got to sell advertising too. I'll sell the advertising, you guys post the tryouts, and I'll be the go-between.
There you go. Look at that.
And I tell people all the time, look, if I didn't hit rock bottom, I don't come up with that. I like, if you got to hit absolutely rock bottom and say, like, one of my favorite books is Russell Simmons' Do You. He goes, at the state of having nothing, you can receive everything. So when I hit rock bottom, I was like, all right, I'll just be the go-between, and that'll be my role in the whole thing. And that's where, you know, a lot of the books and the stuff I'm doing now, that's where it all came about.
I love it. I also want to make another point. I think it's 4-Hour Work Week, if anyone's read that book. Yeah, awesome book, Tim Ferriss, right? And it's about how, like, how can you shit, where was I going with that? I don't even know where I was going with that. There was a really great point I had about 4-Hour Work Week, and now it's gone. That's a drag.
Well, the book in itself is...
It's a great book. Anyone, here, it's a great book. Read it, I guess. But there was, like, a reason why I brought that up, and now it's just totally, totally blanked out. That's kind of a drag. Oh, well. I do want to understand more about, I guess, than the rest of the entrepreneurial journey that you've kind of gone down, right? So you had this Gym 44. Oh, I figured it out. I knew I was going to get back to it. So the one thing about 4-Hour Work Week that always says you should become an entrepreneur, one of the great points is, like, well, like, you can always just go back to what you were doing, right? Right? It's not going to be the end of the world. Like, if you start a business, lose some money, and it didn't work out, like, at least you tried. You didn't just, like, kind of lament it. You could just go back to what you were doing, like, 9 times out of 10. Like, if you're at a really high position somewhere, you don't get that exact position, but you'll get something similar, right? Like, if you're selling gym membership, there's another friggin' gym you can go to, right? So, like, was that kind of the, as you said, like, it allowed you to then, you know, you went back and you sold gym membership and you got back on your feet. Was that kind of always in the back of your mind? No one wants a plan B when they're starting a business, but it was always like, I could just go sell gym memberships again. It's not that big of a deal.
I want to say it was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Another good one.
I'm not sure if he said it in this book, but after I read that book, I became like a fanatic. Like, I was a Ray Lewis fan. I was a Robert Kiyosaki fan. And I want to say it was him who said, if you're going to go broke, try to go broke before you turn 30. So when I started the Ocean City Sharks idea, I was 24 and I promised my parents I wanted to work for an NFL team. The goal after college was to be a scout for an NFL team. And again, because of the entrepreneurial energy I was around, and this was actually the year, Mike, that the NFL was during the lockout. So this was the longest work stoppage in NFL. This was 2010. So I knew whoever they were wrong. Bottom line is, if you're working for the NFL, I didn't necessarily want to trust you with my life, you know, because somebody's not doing something right. So I said, I'm gonna start my own shit. I'm not gonna go try to work for an organization and they're in a lockout for this long. So that's when I tried to create this Ocean City Sharks idea and connect it with either the Ravens or the Eagles or any one of these teams that could have used it as a feeder. So everything I was saying to the players was so believable because I was locked in on what the Ravens were doing. I was getting connected with the NFL and doing things the right way. It's just I didn't have the money because I thought Gym 44 was going to make me the money, and I didn't have the money to actually give the players yet, and everything just fell apart from there. So when I read Robert Kiyosaki's book, he said, if you're going to go broke before you turn 30. I realized, you know what? Go for that shit. Because, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? The worst thing that's going to happen is, again, you just bounce back on your feet and you fail. But if you don't try, you'll be wondering if this shit worked for the rest of your life or if this shit could have worked for the rest of your life.
And then, unfortunately, it did / didn't, right? But then it allowed you to learn a lot of really great information. You're not going to learn any of that stuff, as you said. You're not going to be able to receive as well as you have if you did not go through all this. So I think it's the lessons learned that come from it, which make it not a failure, which I think is the most important part.
You're right.
I love it, dude. So talk to me about what you're doing now. You had a lot of stuff along the way, and now you're working with businesses. Again, you're the one and only Move Swiftly speaker. Talk to me a little bit about what Move Swiftly is, the idea, the concept behind it, how you're helping businesses, how you're helping people, and some of the things how you're positively affecting.
Yeah, so I'll give you sort of the short and sweet version of Swiftly. I realized once I've been in Florida, I got to Florida, it must have been about 4 years in. I moved to Florida because I got a job with the Dolphins. I got a job with the Dolphins Foundation before I turned 30. So this was like 20. I was 28. I just turned 34 this past year. So this was like 28, 29. And I told myself before 30, I got to be with an NFL team. I got to put entrepreneurship on a hold and be with an actual NFL team. So luckily, the Dolphins Foundation offered me a position to just be a seller. It had nothing to do with football. It was all just seller because that's what was on my resume. So that was a part-time position, and I had to get a job at a gym because I knew they would hire me on the spot. So I worked at the gym named Nine Round because I wanted to learn. I wanted to teach people how to box. If you look at Gym 44, you're going to see the image of a boxer, you know, him taking on the world. So I was working those two positions. I'm teaching people how to box, and then I'm also being a seller for them. I was one of the top sellers for the Miami Dolphins Foundation. And I'm seeing these two worlds collide. And I got so annoyed with both of the management structures in both these places. Like the owner of this Nine Round, he didn't do, in my opinion, didn't do enough to get new members in. And I was like the lead trainer. So it got frustrating training the same people every day. And then with the manager with the Dolphins, again, he's corporate. It's the NFL. So it's a lot of red tape. It's only mm-hmm. He has zero. I can't be around people who aren't entrepreneurs for so long before you get like claustrophobic and shit like that. So I realized the only way I'm going to be able to do what it is I want to do is to be a speaker, develop as a public speaker. So I joined Toastmasters and I gave like an absolutely crazy speech. I mean, just absolutely crushed it, Mike. And the dude looks at me, he goes, you need to get your own intellectual property. You can't have like Eric Thomas, Tony Robbins. These dudes have their own stuff that they can buy. And I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep for 48 hours because there was this word that was hitting me. And it started with like be skilled. It just started because the word skilled was hitting me because I realized that was my skill as a speaker. And I was like, skilled, there's something here, right? So just to explain swiftly, anyone that's listening, all right, in football, there are three types of workers. There's the skilled worker, which are the DBs, the running backs, the wide receivers. They make great athletes in every sport. Skilled, S. That's one type of worker. Then there are the well-informed workers. Quarterbacks, linebackers, tight ends. They got to know a lot of information. They're responsible for putting the skilled workers in the right place. That was my position, WI. Then they're the workers that no one gives a shit about, all right? The crew, the big boys, the fat boys, right? The offensive linemen, the only ones you care about is if they're holding or they have some type, they gave up a sack. So that's the crew that's wiping down, you know, the guys that are wiping down windows, mopping floors, all that stuff. So that's swift, all right? If you want to be a great athlete, if you want to be a great worker, you add your LY, which is lift yourself. So that's why you see on my shirt, it says plus LY, move swiftly. I tell people all the time, when we were at Stony Brook, one of our, in my opinion, the best player on the team was a guy named Pops Jonas, because he was a D lineman who would run with the A group. So he's a front team worker running with the skilled group, and he's constantly getting better. That's how you get better. And it's the same thing. I was able to take that concept and translate that into the business world. So let's say you're a skilled cosmetologist, right? If you want to grow, you have to become well-informed. You have to know how the business works. And if you want to have your own shop, you have to, you may not be able to find the people that clean it. You got to be able to clean it and do all the dirty work. You got to lift yourself constantly. So I took that principle and it just fits with the kind of world we live in now where things are happening so fast. It's happening so fast. So that just catches on.
And I think I love the way that you kind of break down that acronym. So appreciate that there, man. And I think it's really important for people to understand that if you fit into one of those three groups of people, it mm-hmm. only behooves you to learn what the other two groups of people are doing, right? I'm in sales and marketing. So I do what I do. I understand what I do and I understand it very well. So now I try and sit in on as many meetings as I can that have nothing to do with sales and marketing. Because right. I want to learn what the hell's going on. Because the more that I know, not only does it improve probably my sales and marketing skills, because now I have better, deeper understanding of the product. But at the mm-hmm. same time, I then have now this ability to speak internally to other groups of people that right. they don't have someone that can speak internally to them because everyone's so siloed in so many different situations. Exactly. So understanding each of those, I try and do that unknowingly, so I appreciate you for that. Now I at least know what I'm doing. But unknowingly, I would do that and just try and make it so that way I am understanding. And then also, it makes you invaluable, right, to your company. Now you are extremely important to many different groups of people, and it's a lot of layoffs going on these days. It's not very fun. So making sure that you're as valuable as you can be to as many different people within your business, your organization as you are, you're much more willing, much more able to stay around a little longer than maybe some others would.
Trevor Lawrence is probably just as fast as all of his Clemson receivers. We'll just drop the mic with that.
Yeah.
There's a reason he was the number one, because he was just as fast. All right, he's not great thrower, great passer, but can you imagine trying to stop a guy that's that good of a passer, but he can also take off on you? What are you going to do? So that could be the same way you are. If you're listening to me right now in your company and whatever it is you're doing, I get you're great at one thing, but it's very, very important that you start to develop those skills in other spots so you become invaluable. Mike just took the words out of my mouth. There's a lot of layoffs. There's a lot of computers. There's a lot of technology. There's a lot of people buying stuff without the actual human touch. So if you're not doing these things, you are on the chopping block. I'm telling you, I've seen it. I've worked all the gyms and all the stuff I've mentioned. Five of these gyms have gone bankrupt. Okay, five of these gyms that I've worked at have gone bankrupt. So it's not me just, it's a great book, yeah, but it's me literally speaking from experiences and watching owners fail because they did not have this mindset.
100%, man. 100%. I appreciate that and respect it. So I guess, how are you utilizing this acronym, everything that you've learned, your speaking career? How are you making money now? What are you doing to take all this information and disseminate it to the people?
So, and not just am I selling the books, now I'm a teacher at this brand new, I just started at a new center, a new learning center named Creative Center of Education, and this school isn't even a year old. So one of the things that I try to do is I try to make sure I'm staying engaged with the younger people so I can figure out the best option in terms of what kind of package, what kind of wholesale price can I sell the books at. So one of the things I am working on is making sure I'm constantly doing workshops and figuring out how am I going to sell the books from a wholesale perspective. Because the biggest problem I had with the books is I was selling it individually and people were buying it, but they weren't reading it. So now I'm working on setting myself up to be an, well, the thing is, I put the books out and I was a trainer. You get a little more respect as an author when you're an educator versus being a trainer. So, you know, I've spent the past, it just actually became 2 years since I've been a teacher. Spent the last 2 years being a teacher and being around all these books. One of the things I love about this school is that they make it so it's K-4. And they make it so the kids have to learn how to read before they leave. So one of the things I'm trying to figure out a way to do is make sure I'm setting myself up in a situation where the books are being bought wholesale and they're being distributed to like centers. So to answer your question, the best way to make money from it is me hosting workshops and then selling the books wholesale.
I love it. Good for you, man. Yeah, you figured out how the game works. It's always funny. I always love looking at my bank statement at the end of the month. And it's like, Amazon sent you $6. I was like, cool. That means like four people bought the book this month. That's right. Awesome. I hope they enjoyed it. Like,
right.
Awesome.
Right.
But
don't be discouraged by that though, man. No.
I love it. It's cool. I'll take that $6. Like, that's cool. Yeah, I think it's great. It's just funny.
Sometimes I've had zero.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I just think it's funny, honestly. Like, it's just, that's awesome. Somebody actually bought my book. How cool it is. It's very, you've taken a much more businessman approach to it, saying, well, it's cool to get that $6, but we should probably get $600, right? Like, let's try and sell this in bulk, because that's how you're actually going to make money with something like this, and you can actually get that information to more people, and the whole goal is to help as many people as you can. So I think that's a great way of looking at it.
Right.
Good stuff, man. So we've kind of beat around the bush of these books a little bit. Talk to me. I know you got four books. You got your podcast going on. You're very heavy into content creation. Talk to me about the books, the ideas behind them, what each one is. I think you got a coloring book, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in there. Talk to me about like the idea, not only behind each of the books, but how they kind of fit into this puzzle that you're trying to create of this whole picture of your life.
Now, Swiftly was the first one, and it's when I was dealing with the when I was at that gym, and I started that because of Toastmasters, and I had to get something out quick, and it breaks down the acronym the same way I just broke it down for you: skilled, well-informed, front team, lift yourself. But the main thing is it has 365 lines at the end in which you can write down how you added your LY, so it's something you could hold on to and go back the next year. Now, once I got that done, and that's for business owners. Any business owners out there that would like a workshop, get that book. I have a workbook that goes with it that, you know, you have to buy it in bulk and all that, but you can contact me when it comes to that. Now, the second book actually took me a little more time because I decided it was when I was trying to leave Nine Round and I wanted to branch out on my own, and I started training kids on how to box. So that one, it's Make Your Move, a Unique Look into Boxing, Dance, and Entrepreneurship. So I went out and I interviewed a ton of dancers. I interviewed a lot of people that were transitioning from football to boxing, basketball to boxing. Like, you take a jab step in basketball, it's the same thing as throwing a jab. It's making sure you just these movements. In fact, I have a picture in that second book where it's Mike Tyson and Tom Brady. Mike Tyson's throwing across, Tom Brady's throwing the ball, and they're in the exact same stance. Exact same stance. So I wanted to give athletes something that can't necessarily afford these major trainers and give them something that wouldn't conflict, like give football, not just football, but any sport, give them something that wouldn't conflict with their sport and implore the kids to go out and learn another sport. And the best sport would be boxing or dance. Dance, you have a lot of flexibility. And I was actually learning from a lot of the dancers telling me that there were some of them that, you know, used to help out football players, help with their flexibility. So that was the first two sections. The third section was all about the entrepreneurship, all about how... No, the first section was it got into my bio a little bit, but the fourth section, the second one, boxing... Third section, dance. Fourth section was more about the entrepreneurship side and a lot of the things I've done. All right, so that was book one and two. Now, I started working at this learning center, and it was a completely different set of challenges, bro. Like, these were kids that they can give a shit about me being an author. They were not impressed with that. It was like, because my ultimate goal is to open up a youth center, right? And I'm thinking, I'm taking this job. I'm like, yeah, I got books out. You know, I'm feeling myself a little bit. But these little kids could not give a rat's ass about me being an author. The only thing they want to do is play, Mike. So they put me in the VPK room, and there was this girl there who would have these nasty tantrums. I'm like, like, just anything set her off. And I know you got one on the way, so, you know, get ready for it.
Ready.
But the one thing about her is, you know, coloring calmed her down. Coloring calmed that she would be having these nasty tantrums, and then we give her a coloring book, and it's like, phew. So I said, if I was to get this concept into kids, what would be the best way to do it? And boom, the coloring book came. So I put out the coloring book specifically for kids, you know. So if parents listening in, if you need something to calm your kids down and you want to teach them a great acronym, the Move Swiftly coloring book. And then the fourth one, that's when Todd hit me up. He was with self-publishing in 30 days. And he, you know, they have a co-authoring program. And the name of the book that he wanted me to be a part of, or he invited me to be a part of, was A Six-Figure Athlete. And that's when I finally had the opportunity to tell people, look, this is the bankruptcy. Like, this is the problem I had. And I was able to put that in a chapter and then connect with fellow co-authors. And that's the one that's more so, listen, if you're either a high school or college athlete and you don't have the six-figure athlete, trust me, you're missing out. You're missing out because with NIL, with the deals and the things, the opportunities that you have now between high school and college, you want to know as much as you can about how to monetize and how to leverage your playing career. So parents, athletes that are at the collegiate and high school level, get the six-figure. If you get anything, get the six-figure athlete, because it's not just me. It's nine other authors that are telling you about how you can turn your skills into cash. The title of the book is The Six-Figure Athlete, Converting Your Skill into Cash. And that would be, you know, again, so that's the level. If you're a business owner, Swiftly. If you're probably youth athlete, like my niece and nephew, if you're like youth athlete age, make your move. High school to college, get the six-figure athlete. And if you have a kid that is just throws a bunch of tantrums, get that coloring book.
I love that. I think the coloring book piece, that's I think the concept of all of them is great. I think the coloring book one hits the most home for a lot of people, right? It's like,
yes, boy, I've been there.
Yeah, no, exactly. You've been there. A lot of people have been there, I'm sure. And I think it's really interesting. I just heard an interview with Damon Johns from Shark Tank fame, and, you know, obviously he's doing a bunch of stuff. He just came out with a kid's book. I don't want to butcher the name of it, but it was something along the lines of how to teach your kid, like, about business and finance from a young age, like a very like 5 to 10 years old, and like just get them to understand kind of what's going on and how it's going on. So, you know, in 5 years when I have a 5 year old, I'll definitely make sure to buy that book and read it to him. But until then, you know, I'll get him a coloring book, and you know, I don't know, what do you, one maybe? You can color at one, right? Hopefully you can understand the concepts and learn from there. So yeah. I think that's great. So that's awesome, man. So you're able to kind of figure out all these different life stages of people, of children, of anybody. What other books do you have coming up that maybe you need to fill in some of the gaps, or maybe a piece that you might have missed here or there?
Well, the plan is I have my memoir written. It's not the right time to drop it yet. So that's the plan, is to drop my final, the fifth and final one will probably be the memoir. And it's over 300 pages. So the other four were, aside from the six-figure athlete, the other ones were self-published. Well, basically the six-figure athlete was self-published as well. The goal is to create enough of a buzz and create enough of a following to where I could drop the memoir and be on some Stephen A. Smith, like, just break the bank with this one.
Because this one
actually started the day I left Stony Brook. It was 2010, and I was trying to figure out, what the hell am I going to do? I have a dream of working in the NFL, and the damn league is in lockout. So I just started going in, and I've saved that. So that one's coming, depending on how big and how mass, if I can get a massive following.
Well, I'll cross my fingers for you, and hopefully a couple people follow you over here after they listen to this episode. So I want to understand, you said, you know, your original goal was to work in the NFL in some capacity. Weird timing with that. It led you down to this path where you're on now. You just brought up before, you didn't really gloss over it, but I wanted to just double down on it. The goal that you currently have is to open up a youth center, correct?
Yes, to open up my own youth center, like a chain of youth centers where we teach boxing, dance, and entrepreneurship.
Where I mean, I understand the boxing, dance, and entrepreneurship. We talked about that in the book, but I guess where did this goal come from? Was this something from a young age? Did you spend a lot of time there? Like, where's the idea of wanting to do this come from?
The goal came from when I was at Nine Rounds. So, you know, a lot of the people that I served and I got really close to were a lot of the mothers that came in. You know, when you're learning boxing, some of them were in abusive relationships. Some of them were like really opened up, and they were parents. And when COVID happened, we were all in a really shitty place. So some of them actually paid me to train their kid. So it's one of my things is when that happened, is I was like, you know what, that needs to be the new goal. The goal should not be anymore to go and work for anybody. The goal should be to serve these mothers. Serve these mothers that need help. Serve these mothers in a way that, you know, no one else has.
That's awesome, man.
So that became my new dream.
Yeah, and look at that. Came out of COVID, potentially, right? A lot of bad things happen, but only a lot of good things happen if you pay attention to them. So good for you, man. Coming up with something good. Yeah, I think you'll affect more people this way than... I mean, working in the NFL sounds great. I think you'll affect a couple more people this way, which I think is the ultimate goal.
And the thing is, once I worked there, once I got a whiff of the people there, I couldn't be them. I couldn't be that afraid to lose my job. I couldn't be that.
I love the way you're thinking, man. And then the last thing I want to talk about, obviously, is the Move Swiftly podcast. You are the host of the podcast 5 days a week. You're dropping content. You have over 350 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. So you've been doing this thing for a little while now. Talk to me about that. I mean, as you said, you wanted to become a speaker. You went through Toastmasters. You have all this great training, opportunity. Where's the idea? How much do you love doing a podcast? I mean, you're on a podcast. We got to talk about it, man. Talk to me a little bit about your show.
Well, that's how it happened. You know, again, I was doing Toastmasters. I had all these speeches ready. I'm ready to fire them off. And I'm like practicing at the gym. I'm like developing my content. I'm knowing my tone. I'm this, I'm that. And it's like, all right, let's go. And then the coronavirus happened. The coronavirus happened, bro. And it's like, ah, damn. Well, who am I going to say it to? Like, I have all this stuff memorized. I was ready to go on, just spit fire. And then, you know, again, shout out to you, Taj. I reconnected with Taj around that time. And I'm thinking podcasting's a couple $100. I'm thinking it's going to be like something I got to save up some money for. And he goes, you heard Anchor? That shit is 100% free, Broham. And ever since then, most of my episodes are solo episodes, and no one is spared. There's no limits. Listen, I go, if there's something I feel like talking about, we're just going to go at it. A closed mouth does not get fed. So the reason I've been able to get over 350 episodes is because, again, I just keep it as raw as I can keep it. I keep it all the way 100 with that show. So that is my baby. If I tell people all the time, if I had to get rid of Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, I would just keep my podcast and just go rip it.
I couldn't agree more, man. It's my number one. It's my favorite thing I get to do. Talk to cool people like you doing some cool shit in the sports space, man. It is 100% mine. And I think the way you're thinking about it is correct, right? It's authenticity. Be open, be honest. People love someone that is real. And, you know, like, again, I think it was For Our Work Week, if I'm not mistaken, or at least it was Tim Ferriss' podcast. He said, create content that you like, because there's probably 50,000 people out there that like the same kind of content you do. You can get in front of those 50,000 people. You could sell a shitload of books. You could sell a shitload of t-shirts. You can monetize that audience. As long as you're giving them value through the podcast that they love, they'll buy your stuff. They'll come see your shows. Like, there's a way. If you can get 50,000 people, you can monetize them. You can live a very happy life where you do the thing that you love the most. And this is the thing I love to do the most. Get to ask people like you questions, man. So I really do appreciate you letting me do that. And I think, you know, the opportunity, just keep putting them out, man. Just keep going. Just keep going. Right. That's the only thing you can do. See what happens.
Exactly. That's it. And again, even if you don't get as many listens, you develop the confidence you need. You develop the confidence you need for when you go out. Like, I didn't mention this before, but I also am a trainer for a company in Positive Coaching Alliance, and we did go out and speak at high schools, speak to coaches, speak to athletes, or whatever it is. And there was a workshop. It was over 150 kids. I did not expect to speak in front of 100, but again, I was prepared. Why? Because I have a podcast that comes out daily. So even if you're not getting a lot of listens, if you're moving in that direction, it's more of a self battle that you're fighting, and you're winning it.
If zero people listened, I'd still do this. Thankfully, people do listen. So that's cool. And again, shout out to all you people listening out there. I think I have one episode on YouTube that has over 14,000 views in it. Like, I mean, that means to me I can stand in a stadium full of 14,000 people. I've already done it. So what the hell? Why not? What's the difference here?
1,000%.
I love it, brother. Where can we find the podcast? Where can we follow you online? You got websites. Give me all that stuff. I'll make sure to put it in the description for everyone as well.
The main website is makeyourmove.com. That's makeyamove.com. You can find me on Instagram, swift_ly44, and Aswand Crookshank for Facebook and LinkedIn, and the Move Swiftly podcast. It's available everywhere. So
love it. I'll get a couple links. That's awesome. Appreciate it, man. Aswand Crookshank, one more time, four-time author, Move Swiftly podcast host, former Stony Brook University football player, and the one and only Move Swiftly speaker. Really appreciate your time today, man. Time's the only thing we don't get more of. So thank you for yours. I appreciate the audience for giving us some of theirs. But other than that, hope everyone has a great rest of your day. Thanks, man.
All right, guys.
Bye, everybody.